This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. Save 10% on your entire order by using the coupon code AC10. That's AC10 at checkout. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Android Central podcast. It is episode number 196 for Thursday. August 31st, 2014. Welcome back. Welcome to the show. Yes, we are going a day early this week because
August 31st.
August 31st? Wait, is it August? No, July 31st. Oh. I had the number right. That's the important. You know,
I was already going to say, July has gone by quickly, but August too, while I was at it.
This giant thing in front of my face here is throwing me off. I put it on top of my mic to make me look more professional or something. No, it supposedly cutouts the popping. Did that work? Did you hear any popping?
Only intentional popping.
Yeah, I'm not sure it completely fixes it. Anyway, what's going on? Phil Nickinson. I edit AndroidCentral.com with these guys. Andrew Martinick in Seattle.
Hello there.
Hey, you know what I just thought of, Andrew, as we were giving Richard a hard time for the high-pitched whatever in the background. You have F-18s buzzing around Seattle today.
Yeah, exactly. I think they start up again at 1:30. So they were testing. The Blue Angels are here for a thing we call Seafair. And so they were doing practice runs around downtown from 10 to noon. The first time I heard it, I thought it was just a really low-flying plane, like a airliner. And then I saw them swirling around in formation. It was kind of crazy. So I went up to the roof and, listened to them for a while.
My Blue Angels, they're based here in Pensacola.
So I hear.
They're mine. That makes me feel good about myself. I don't know. It's actually pretty cool because I can see them out the window when they practice a couple times a week. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd want it happening over downtown a couple times a week, but it's cool once a year anyways.
Alex Dobie in England. Do you have planes flying around where you are?
Not that I can see or hear. So there's that.
All right then. And we brought Richard Devine back. He kept wondering if we'd ever ask him back. Hi, Richard.
Hello, and then I come back and my washing machine's going in the background and you can all hear it, so I'm sorry, this is why I'm not allowed on the podcast usually.
But at least we know you're clean.
It's a plane, just a very, very low floor plane.
We do have, we have the Red Arrows based near where I live, kind of our equivalent, if you like, I would imagine, the Blue Angels, so I get to see those all the time, that's pretty cool.
What do they fly? What kind of plane?
I have no idea, it's a red one.
If only we had some way to look this stuff up. And red,
it's a red one.
Arrow. Is it Red Arrows? Yeah.
Red Arrows. Yeah, I don't nerd out on that stuff.
What are those? I don't even know what those are. Just on site.
Old is what they are, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're cool.
Cool.
I feel you're reaching the limits of our aviation knowledge here, Phil.
No, I mean, look, I'm pretty good with commercial stuff right now. I'm pretty good with a lot of military stuff. I just don't know what those are. We could ask Google, what kind of plane is the Red Arrow?
Will it tell me? Google Hangouts automatically mutes him properly when he starts typing.
Let's see. Where'd it go? I see T1. I think that's what I saw.
Could be.
I'll get emails now. I'm probably already getting emails.
You don't know AirplaneCentral.com.
Airplane. We should totally start an aviation site, actually. And
everybody flies around enough. They start to geek out about it.
Man, I tell you, when I went up to Chicago a few weeks ago for the go-go thing, I got to meet all the av geeks. That's what they call themselves, like aviation geeks, av geeks. And like, I mean, smartphone nerds are kind of weird, and we are all smartphone nerds. We are all kind of weird, but it was like a whole nother world of weirdness. Like, I can't geek out on what kind of seat is in an airplane, but to each his own. So it was kind of cool. But yeah, we could totally do that. I know people.
Sweet.
I guess we got to talk about Android today, though, because that's why we're here.
No plane reviews today.
we'll save those for another day.
Actually, we kind of will, because I can't reach it where I'm standing right now. But yeah, I'm going to Dallas tomorrow for Geek Beat. They are opening up their Geek House. John and Callie, you know them. We did CES Live with them. They helped out with the Samsung Developers Conference last year. And, of course, Talk Mobile. All last year, so you guys know John and Callie. So they're having a big open house at their Geek House tomorrow. I'm gonna go. I'm taking my wife. It's gonna be a lot of fun. Ed Begley Jr. is gonna be there. That's kind of crazy. But anyway, so I got the boarding pass on my watch today on Android Wear. So I'm gonna try that for the first time and see how it goes. I'm a little afraid to swipe it away. because I don't know if I can get it back. There's not actually, like, it comes over from the Delta app on the phone, but it doesn't actually have, like, a companion app that shows up on the watch. So
you can't tell it in the Android app, hey, you know, now I'm ready to board
kind of thing? It just put it up there today, so I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. Early. You would think it'd be smart enough, like, my flight's at 9, maybe say at like 7 o'clock, we just start showing it to you, and you can't get rid of it or something, I don't know. I mean, better would be to have just, you know, button either on the app or the watch, I guess. But we'll see. I'll write up something after I get it to work or get it to work.
I tried it with a Pebble boarding card in Turkey in April, and you've never seen reactions like it. it's like the guy at the gate just looked at me as I put my watch under the scanner. I was like, what do you want me to do with this? That'd be more interesting for me. It'll work because, you know, it's just a QR code, isn't it? The same as on the phone. I'd be more interested in the reactions of people who may have not come across these kind of things yet.
I think doing pretty much anything on a smartwatch, you're going to get those kind of reactions, at least for the next year or so.
It's going to be, depending on like how you do it, it might be a weird like angle too. I'm trying to think.
Those scanners aren't always, I mean, they're usually thin. They're made to slide a phone or a piece of paper underneath.
Not always. I'm thinking more about the positioning. Like sometimes they're top down and you can just, you know, stick your arm under it and you're good. Sometimes they're bottom up. So I'd have to like put my wrist on there upside down and that would be kind of weird. And then the TSA ones are usually facing toward you. So I guess that shouldn't be too bad.
Towards you at an angle a little bit.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting. Do you need something like that on your smartwatch? I mean, is it that hard to pull your phone out and, you know, make sure you've got it, make sure it's right there?
No.
I think the answer, do you need anything on a smartwatch, is probably no. A smartwatch is not something that you need at the moment. And that's maybe a problem with the category. And it's just, it's never going to be as essential as a smartphone is. It's always going to be tagged on to this device that you're always carrying with you. And it's always going to be a case of if you don't have it or the battery runs out or whatever, it's always not the end of the world because it's always tethered to this larger device that does all the same stuff and more.
Everybody listening live, if you can think of something that you have to have on a smartwatch other than, say, a watch, a clock, I mean, throw it in the Q&A and we'll talk about it. But, I mean, I can't think of
even
anything
that's debatable whether you need to have the watch in most cases for a clock.
Well, then there's that. I mean, I haven't worn a watch in forever because I stand in front of a computer all day. There are clocks on the wall and I have a phone in my pocket. Yeah.
Well, and the argument would be that for a regular, you know, analog watch, you don't have to have your phone nearby, which already tells time in order to, you know, have any functionality out of it. So the fact that it relies on a phone for pretty much everything but telling the time kind of tells you, you know, how much you don't really need the watch.
It gets back to my whole, do you use this smartwatch as an accessory, as a watch that does other things, or do you treat it like a full Android device, because it essentially is?
It essentially is at a technical level, but it's not designed to be used that way, at least not the way the software is right now. It's full Android, but the way you can interact with it is very, very cut down.
I think at some point they're going to find that happy medium, and I hate to say, you know, maybe it'll take Apple doing something different. Maybe it'll take somebody. I'm trying to think who else might. But yeah, like right now it's just this thing, and everybody's kind of doing whatever. And then, you know, at least Google's there, like giving people direction, and I think Google will have more direction once it matures a little bit. Once we get, you know, maybe with the L release, when they update the software, they're going to be like, hey, here's all this cool stuff you can actually do now, and here's the way we think you should do it. It's awesome that everybody's been doing this stuff, but it's been kind of wonky. I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting. I hope.
Mm-hmm. I think just more manufacturers getting involved and putting their own spin on things is just going to make it better for everyone. You know, competition, new ideas coming from different places. Microsoft supposedly is working on something as well. And of course, Pebble, which is developing all the time. So yeah, it'll take time and more products, and everyone will get better over time.
I still absolutely think Pebble has a place, and it's still, I mean, I'm looking at my Pebble Steel here, and I think it feels better as a watch, just physically. I'm trying to remember how to put it on. It's been a while. I think the face is easy. It's a hell of a lot easier to read, right? That I don't think we can stress that enough, just how much easier the e-paper is than AMOLED or LCD outside, especially outside.
Yeah, it's the kind of AMOLED, the kind of LCD that you have in these watches as well, which, I mean, ultimately that's just a battery problem, isn't it? You can't run these screens as bright as you would a phone, which, you know, actually most phones now are relatively easy to see outside. You can't run this that bright just because the power isn't there in the batteries, and it's probably going to take some kind of, you know, mini revolution maybe in the way battery technology works to actually get things up to that level.
Yeah. I mean, we're spinning our wheels. It's like, I want it to, but it can't. Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
Or from the other end of it, getting e-ink that's better, you know, faster refresh rate on e-ink, you know, colors on Mirasol that don't suck. That, you know, that could maybe make up the distance from the other end. But if you're going to stick with traditional smartphone displays, your power efficiency needs to get better.
Yeah. Anything else in Android Wear since we're launching about it? Anyone come up with
ideas? We're still waiting on the Moto 360.
Yes.
That is still happening.
It's got to be soon-ish. Or doesn't.
I'm betting this, well, I say this month, August, this coming month. I think it'll be sometime in the next
tomorrow,
month.
Dude.
Yep, that's what I mean. It'll be sometime. I don't think we'll be, put it this way, when we leave for IFA and all the stuff we're expecting there in early September, I think we'll already have all the new Motorola stuff. That's my prediction.
I think you're right. I don't know anything. I don't know anything, but I think you're right. It's just weird and annoying. I want it now.
We had that post from, was it Puneet today from Motorola?
Yeah.
On Google Plus saying, look, not been around much. We've been working on stuff. It's been taking time, long days and all that. So hopefully now they're in the final stretch and we'll actually see what they've been working on pretty soon.
I'm still super excited for Motorola. I don't know about you guys, but even with the weird Lenovo stuff going on, or I assume it's still going on. I mean, the deal hasn't closed yet, right? And I don't know.
It's just interesting how that hasn't really taken away from their public perception and the kind of mojo they have going, you know, as far as everybody seems to just be interested in what Motorola is doing, even though they haven't released anything new in, you know, in several months.
Well, there's a lot of buzz around the 360. A lot of the products they have now, the, you know, the new stuff, whatever comes out in the next month or so, is part of the, you know, the Google Motorola roadmap. Whatever plans Lenovo have, that it will only take form after the deal closes. You know, now Motorola, despite, you know, knowing they're probably going to get purchased by Lenovo, they're still in Google mode. That's still the roadmap, and that's still, you know, for people who like Android, that's an exciting roadmap. That's products that we're all interested in.
And actually, think back to like a year ago when on the Google calls, you would hear them say, on the earnings calls, you would hear them say, look, there's this roadmap of stuff that we have to finish making for Motorola. We're not, you know, and obviously they're like, we're not crazy about it. It's costing a lot of money, but we have to finish it because, you know, we have these deals that were made a long time ago and we absorbed them. So yeah, there's probably some of that going on. The question is, what's Lenovo going to do? Are they going to nuke whatever awesomeness Motorola's been doing? Are they going to let Motorola keep going? I would absolutely hope they are. And we saw some executive shifts this week, which may or may not mean anything. I don't really know. But God, I hope, I mean, I'm still just so impressed with what Motorola has done in the past year. And I can't believe it's only been a year with the Moto X and the software, just as good as it is, as clean as it is, and as helpful as it is, really.
I think a lot of that roadmap stuff that we dealt with through last year was a lot of agreements with carriers to ship a lot of specific devices. So you would hope that there'd be no, you know, although there's no reason for Lenovo to hold on to that, you know, whatever Google Motorola stuff is happening, if there's not carriers involved, you would hope that, you know, Lenovo would see those go through, because they obviously see some value in Motorola's products and name. So, you know, obviously they have to be somewhat happy with those products and not just want to kill them and, you know, absorb Motorola completely.
Yep, totally agree. And I'm going to segue us into our first Q&A topic. It's actually something we're going to talk about, one of the week's bigger stories.
Okay.
Do it.
Sachin writes, what do you think of the rumors of the 5.9-inch Motorola Nexus phone codenamed Shamu?
Don't do it. Please.
That's the first reaction from everybody, but... And look, I love the idea of a smaller phone. I thought Era wrote a really good thing on that this week. And you know, we've all been saying this forever, right? Like, we enjoy the idea of a smaller phone. Bigger is great for a lot of people, but not everybody. But Motorola, at the same time, has been able to do... I mean, look at just how svelte is the word I'll use. The Moto X was in the G and the E. You know, I mean, this is a 5.5-inch device. 5.9 is going to be that much bigger.
And that's going to be the bare minimum for a 5.9, isn't it? You know,
yeah, and I keep trying to tell myself, what if they get like a 5.9-inch device in something this size, but they're just not going to. So I got to quit lying to myself.
Yeah. The interesting thing for me is software and L and how this all fits together. If this is coming later this year, and of course you have the tablet from HTC as well, supposedly. But if you're making a conscious decision to make this size of device as a launch Nexus phone for L, then you've got to think that how does that tie into what is new in the software? What have they got prepared that is, you know, makes shipping the Nexus phone for that generation of Android something that big? I don't know. I don't necessarily have the answer to that, but it's just interesting to think about.
I thought you did a really good job explaining the things that need to go into that, right? If you're going to have this, an L is 64-bit compatible, right?
Yep, and that wasn't me, that was Jerry.
Jerry? Okay. Sorry, Jerry. We miss you. You guys are interchangeable to me at that point. It's like, all right, here's this one awesome... one of the awesome guys wrote it, whatever. No, sorry, Jerry. It's Jerry's day off. That's why Jerry's not here today. I thought Jerry did a really good job laying that out. Here are the things we know, here are the things we think we know, here are the things that we're, 99.9% sure we expect to see with a full L release, and 64 bits one of them because Google said so. But maybe there's a surprise out there. I don't know. It's going
to
be interesting.
And even from the standpoint of 64-bit processors, we're kind of struggling to see what processor they would go with. Qualcomm's not ready until the beginning of 2015. NVIDIA is not ready for chips and phones that are 64-bit, and so that's kind of questionable too. And it's really, really odd. What is this phone going to be, and what is it actually, going to mean as far as the hardware spec that they rely on for the next year or so as a development device?
Yeah, the only other possibilities are, I think Jerry mentioned Intel, and Intel and phones has always been kind of a crapshoot. We'll see if Jerry was saying that. Probably wouldn't want to have an Intel chip in what you would call a reference device, and I probably agree there. The other one is
99% of everything else is ARM.
MediaTek, they have something 64-bit, but I think the roadmap they were specifying for that when they announced it, it's basically an 8-core A53, I think. So it's the eight of the low-powered 64-bit ARM chips, and that's probably not going to be ready until the end of the year. The other one is Samsung, and you're never going to put a Samsung chip in a non-Samsung phone, so that's kind of out immediately. Or they might just make it 32-bit. If they just want to sell a phone to sell a phone, they'll put anything in it. The Nexus 7 2013 didn't have anything particularly groundbreaking in it hardware-wise. There wasn't anything that you needed in there to have a reference tablet that did a certain thing. It was just a tablet they could sell. So maybe they're just going to do that. They'll stick a Snapdragon 805 or whatever in there and call it a day.
What if they did how much I hate saying phablet, but an oversized phone, and then hold off till next year on something more normal?
They could do. I don't know. This is the thing I can't really work out. If they did that, they would pretty much have to keep the Nexus 5 around for at least another 6 months until Silver or whatever it is, yep. If it's still happening, happens. So would you have maybe a Nexus 6 and also keep selling the Nexus 5? I mean, the Nexus 5 is a good phone, but it has issues with battery life compared to all the current stuff, and technology just moves on. So they could do that. They could probably stretch the Nexus 5 out for another 6 months if they wanted to, but the choice there for a good L phone is kind of, it's maybe not a choice that most normal consumers will make. You either have an oversized phone or you have a last year's phone, which, not a great choice there, really.
Because I like to think that I like surprises. I think Google's going to surprise us. I think we're going to see something and be like, oh, and it's going to totally make sense, but just none of us thought of it.
They're like, oh, it's a 4.9-inch phone. Somebody just hit the wrong number on the keyboard.
Big typo.
Stranger things have happened.
Well, it's not like we have a bunch of pictures or really conclusive evidence on this yet. We have a couple of unconfirmed reports that kind of overlap. And, we're still a good ways out. We're talking about the end of October for the last two Nexuses, so...
Yeah, and I hope we do get that kind of moment of revelation where we see, oh, that's where they made that, that's why we have L and also this massive device, and it would all make sense. We'll see. Hopefully they do.
L stands for large.
Speaking of large, Ryan asks, physical size is a major factor why people continue to use or go back to the Moto X. The X Plus One is expected to jump to 5.1 inches. Is this bad? Will this prevent Jerry from getting one? I bet no, and I go back to that same reasoning I was just saying, because I think Motorola will be able to do it in a way that doesn't feel that big. I mean, mostly that, like, LG's done it like that. I would even argue Samsung's done it. You know, these larger smartphones that are, you know, just not quite feeling that large. Obviously,
it's all about, it's about shape and materials, yeah, too, not just screen size.
HTC kind of said, screw it, we've got speakers on ours. They're awesome. Deal with it.
And you can hear the speakers all the way until it hits the floor.
Yes, when you drop it. It's not to say I don't like the M8. I absolutely do. But yeah, I get you. No, I think Jerry will probably still be all over it. Maybe. I'm going to speak for Jerry now that he's not here and I'm selling his work to other writers.
I think, I mean, in terms of the X Plus One or whatever it's called being either 5 or 5.1, you've also got to take into account just the reality of selling it to carriers. If carriers want 5-inch devices because 5-inch devices are selling, then that's what Motorola is going to have to make. And you work within those parameters as best you can with trimming down bezels and all this other stuff they've been doing.
Ooh. And I already pointed out, we talked about this previously, that the Droid line had 5-inch displays, but were just, you know, Moto X's in different bodies, and those were completely usable and fine. So, you know, you pointed out about a 5.5 inch or 5.3, whatever, you know, size can easily fit into what we would normally think of a traditional 5-inch body, you know, with smaller bezels and things like that.
Yeah, you look at the Moto X, and that's as large as about most, you know, your average 4.3 inch phone from a few years ago. So, yeah, a big display doesn't have to mean a big phone.
What if they held off till next year and they released the N64?
No.
Oh. No. Killing me. Crushing my dreams.
Only if it comes with an emulator loaded on it. You play Super Mario World.
GoldenEye.
Think how many they would sell. Oh, I would play GoldenEye on that for days.
I mean, what other options does Nintendo have other than the license that name?
That would be awesome. Sachin asks another good question. Some of the versions of the 2013 Nexus 7 are out of stock in the Play Store. Does this mean another Nexus tablet is coming? Either Nexus 7 2014 or Nexus 8. I mean, we are like exactly a year, you know, past the past Nexus 7.
Well, the whole thing is we didn't really talk about this, you know, the last 3 months that the Nexus 7 has been in and out of stock, because devices go in and out of stock, and it's always been, you know, the 32 gig white Wi-Fi model is out of stock, and then that one's back, and the 32 gig black LTE model's out of stock. I mean, yeah, this happens.
I wouldn't read too much into it. Yeah, it varies by country as well. You know, it'll be in stock in the UK and out of stock in the US, or vice versa, or whatever. But I wouldn't read too much into that. I also think we are probably, you know, a good couple months out from seeing the new Nexus tablet yet.
Not in a couple of weeks.
Make of that what you
want. Yeah, I mean, you can get, I'm looking right now, you can get the cell version still. The Wi-Fi ones are sold out. I mean, yeah, it's due any time now if they're going to do another one.
So. And I mean, you can still walk into pretty much any T-Mobile store in the country and buy one too. I don't think they're shortchanged. You're not seeing them go on fire sales at $150 or something like that to get rid of stock. And we're not quite at those levels yet.
And I don't think we're going to be seeing one in a couple of weeks at this HTC event in New York, as people were sort of suggesting to them.
Unless it's running Windows.
That was annoying as hell. All right, so here's the inside baseball, folks. I've had a look at this stuff. When somebody says, hey, HTC just sent out invites to this thing, look at who said that, right? If it's kind of a general news site, you know, awesome, cool. But then look who else starts saying, hey, we got an invite, right? When Android sites are not saying they get an invite, and Windows Phone sites are saying, hey, we got an invite, that's probably a pretty good sign. And if the first words out of your mouth are HTC and the Nexus 8 event, you know, stop and think about all the other recent Nexus events. And yeah. I was thinking back.
Just like that ASUS event that showed off the Nexus 7, right, guys? Yeah. Come on.
No, it's, I mean, thinking back, the only Nexus E event that was done by the manufacturer was actually the Galaxy Nexus.
But and that was a weird one anyway, wasn't
and
it?
That was a weird one anyway. That was supposed...
Even that, there's still, you know, Matias Duarte on stage showing off.
Yeah,
the film,
and so. Even then, and I need to go back. I should dig through my email and try to find it. I'm pretty sure that invite actually came from Samsung and not Google. But, I mean, as far as more recent memory, yeah, it's all come from Google and not the manufacturer. So just, you know, one of those things to look at. You know, who gets invites? Who's saying they got invites? And, you know, you can pretty much kind of figure out what's coming.
We didn't get does want to, does wish it is the Nexus 8 just so we can make Dan do a hands-on with it.
Hey, look, and I love the idea of a Windows Phone version of the email. I might even get one just because the only Windows Phone device I have laying around here is the Lumia 1020. It's still a good device, but it's kind of getting there in age. Speakers. So
we were kind of looking at this before. Is this kind of an admission that it's basically, you know, if it is just an M8 with Windows Phone on it, is this an admission that it basically isn't worth designing a phone for Windows Phone now, given that, you know, Microsoft has now fully absorbed Nokia?
I kind of think the Windows Phone partnerships are so strange because, like, look at Samsung and you can kind of say the same thing, right? It's like, all right, here's a Samsung device with Windows Phone. Whereas the Lumias are all really compelling devices, I think.
Well, I mean, at least with Samsung, you have the lip service of it actually looks different.
Yeah.
Well, HTC, you know, they actually designed one phone to be, you know, dramatically different from their Android offerings. But other than that, I mean...
Which one? Nokia which one are you thinking?
The 8X.
8X? No, that was almost like the DNA.
But,
The DNA came after it, actually. But
yeah, I mean,
the 8X was pretty distinct. It was a lot different than Samsung's Windows phones were from the S3 and S4.
True.
Mm.
Those were just a Windows sticker put on the home button instead of, you know, having back end multitasking button or back end menu buttons at that time.
I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with the branding if they keep the HTC One name, because that's, you know, as much as it's been, you know, used for lots of different things and had lots of different letters and numbers after it, it's still a big deal for HTC, and it's an important brand for them.
It would be like every other HTC One we've had that says, this is the HTC One. This is the only HTC One. It's all about HTC One. Here are six other HTC Ones.
X plus S.
It's just like, okay.
HTC One W8 with Windows Phone 8.1.
Yeah, the rumored name was HTC One M8 for Windows or something like that.
Yeah,
I'm not crazy about the name, but who knows? You know, brand
Windows Phone 7 series devices.
Anyway, that's August 19th. There's a Sprint event later that day where they're talking about taking the edge off. I don't have a feel for that at all. Conceivably, that could be a follow-up. It's like, hey, HTC just announced this thing. Now come see it on Sprint. Maybe, and that would almost make sense if it were kind of like an M8, because it's all curvy. But take the edge off also sounds like a network thing, so who knows? I don't know. We'll be at that as well, so stay tuned.
Interesting.
August 19th. Man, it's going to be a busy couple months. What else? You guys want to talk about this fake ID thing at all? I thought Jerry did a really nice job explaining this. See, I did it on purpose that time. No, Alex
did a really wonderful job explaining it.
Alex did a nice job.
Jerry did a wonderful job explaining it to me.
Yeah,
We run that post past him, so there's some of his input in there.
It took like five of us to get that done, didn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. There's a lot of planning and thought that went into that post. So it's and actually Jerry could probably do a better job explaining the sort of technical details of how it works. Basically, it's an exploit that goes into works around a bug in the Android package installer, which is the thing that installs apps on your phone. And it has to do with the certificates that apps are signed with, and they haven't been specific as to how it actually works and how they've done it, but basically it doesn't, you know, you can chain certificates together in a way that the package installer doesn't check the validity of one of them. And that's bad because if you can pretend an app is signed by someone that it isn't, basically in some situations, it can do, you know, it gets access to things that certain other apps can do. And in certain cases, those are very sort of low-level system things, like, for example, Adobe Flash. That's how Flash support works, or, you know, some of the secure NFC stuff. So, you know, potentially quite bad. You know, it affects Android 2.2 to, you know, some versions of KitKat as well. So potentially quite a serious bug.
But,
yeah, I mean, so they disclosed this, Blue Box, the guys who discovered this, they disclosed it to Google in April. And since then, you know, patches went out to all the manufacturers. There are patches for various versions of Android. Of course, it's fixed in 4.3, which has come out since then. And, you know, the obvious way to look at that is to say, okay, it's fixed in 4.3. There are security patches, but everyone has to update the devices, and all these Android phones are vulnerable to it. But if you take that view, you kind of ignore Google Play Services, which is a big part of not just getting new features, new APIs onto phones, but also fixing security holes. So there's this Verify Apps feature, which is introduced in Play Services about a couple of years ago. I think it was shortly after 4.1. And essentially, that's you know, an antivirus layer that kicks in before you install apps that... You know, as part of Play Services, it's updated continually in the background. So, you know, basically, if you're running, I think, Ice Cream Sandwich and up, and you're fully up to date on Play Services, then there's some pretty serious protection there from you ever being affected by this, to say nothing of the fact that Google scanned everything on the Play Store for it. It's not been spotted there yet. And, you know, if you're sensible about where you get your apps from, then you're probably never going to run into it.
And as Jerry kept reminding us, you're going to have to be able to spoof the RSA key for in the first place, you know, to spoof the cert. So, I mean, this is another one of those, like, it's not unimportant. I absolutely do not want to come off as sounding like it's unimportant, but it's still very kind of theoretical. And, you know, it's not like I'm going to get it right this second just by walking down the street. It's one of those things that needs to be fixed. It has been fixed. Cool. Let's move on.
Yeah, and you know, it's easy to look at vulnerabilities in a very sort of black and white way and say, okay, all these phones are vulnerable, when that's, you know, you need to look at the way Android works and figure out that actually, even though technically, you know, I said it in the post, you know, stopping a vulnerability from being exploited isn't the same as getting rid of it, but it's, you know, from a user perspective, it's the same thing. If you can't, you know, if it blocks the app before installing it, then that's the same thing. You're prevented from being affected by that security issue.
This is not one that's going to keep me up at night, put it that way. I mean, I think part of my problem with all this is that these security companies, you know, they keep putting out these sky is falling posts, and then that doesn't help anything. And then you get so many just bad stories on it, like just not well written stories when you see, you know, Apple blogs going ape over it, and just it's ridiculous. And it hurts the eco. It hurts all the security ecosystems, because then everybody's crying wolf, and you don't know what's important and what's not.
Yeah, and it's easy to fall into one camp or the other and say this is all FUD, or, you know, this is the end of Android. And the truth is always somewhere in between. But the people writing these stories often don't, you know, don't look far enough, unfortunately, into the problem to be able to work out what's really going on.
Richard fell asleep. He's that not worried about it.
Jerry says I'm fine, so you know what? Alex contributed a little bit as well, but the sky is not falling.
No, so, the sky is absolutely not falling.
We'll survive.
Looking through the Q&A here some more. Here's an interesting one from Ahmed. What would brick my Galaxy S4, rooting or ROMs? I mean, either one potentially.
Yeah. As to which one's more likely to break your phone, it's probably easier to break a phone just by rooting it, just because of the things you could potentially do. Normally with a bad ROM, you can just restore through recovery or whatever.
I tell you, that's my favorite thing about Nexus devices, is that you can just unlock them, flash, you know, not whatever, but, you know, easily flash things back to stock as long as you don't screw up bootloaders. It's right before we started today, I just updated my Galaxy Nexus with a factory firmware because it needed to be updated. I did a Nexus 4 this week, and it's like, I know how to do it. It's so easy to do. You just done.
Phil's back in 2012.
I really was. Yeah. No, my answer would be go to the forums, find the tutorials in the forums, ask questions if you need help. Don't be afraid to do that.
The biggest issue doesn't come from, you know, trying to do one specific thing, but it's doing it incorrectly when you're relying on some root method that requires an exploit, because then you're looking at situations where you're, you know, touching things that don't need to be touched. And if you hit the wrong things, you know, it can flip the switch and, you know, make it harder to restore. But in most cases, Samsung devices, you're usually going to be okay hooking up the keys and forcing it back to, you know, stock firmware.
Yeah, or Odin's the other one, the unofficial one. I mean, it varies from manufacturer to manufacturer, right? Samsung's pretty easy. LG is difficult, but it's a weird kind of difficult where if you have the right stuff, it's just a case of arranging things in Windows in the right way that you can flash the phone, because it's all Windows-based and kind of archaic. HTC, you've got your RUUs, which are really easy if you can get hold of them, then getting better at locking that stuff down. But like Phil said, nothing is as easy as a Nexus to restore back to stock.
And it teaches you, we've talked about this before, but it really kind of teaches you how to do these things and what fastboot is and what you do in fastboot that's a little different from ADB and how these things talk to each other. And I still think it's important to learn, because I've done it too. I used to hack the crap out of my GS3 and I would follow all these things and not really understand what was going on. After a while, I started to learn a little more about it and figure it out, but I just follow the instructions as best I could. But if something went wrong, it's just kind of like, well, now what? I don't know. That's why I like the Nexus. And that's why I think, it's really nice the phones are so good now that you really don't have to worry about hacking into it. Jerry wrote that thing a few weeks ago, if you haven't read it, about how it kills us when people say, root your phone to make it faster. No, that's not quite how it works.
Mm-hmm.
That's worth reading if you haven't. What else? What else is going on with the Q&A? Oh, here's a good one. We haven't written about this, and I'm actually going to walk over and grab my watch in a second. Wes asked, do you have any experience with the Pogo pins in the G-Watch tarnishing? The gold coating has almost completely worn off mine, and I'm worried about the longevity, having only owned it for a couple weeks. I'm going to go find mine and look. Alex, how's yours?
Let me look. It looks okay so far.
It's rubbing up against your arm all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of gunk in there, but it looks okay, and it still charges, so...
See, here's mine. I don't know if you can see. You can almost see the two in the middle. Where is it down here? A little discolored, but as far as I can tell, it's working. I wonder if like a pencil eraser, if you get it in there, will that clean it up a little bit? I don't know.
Is it just a coloring, or is it actual?
There have been
supposedly is affecting its ability to charge for some people.
Early adopters. I mean, that's not a good answer on my part. I think if you buy something like this, it should work. And if it doesn't work, you should be able to send it back. Absolutely.
And we've heard other issues with the Samsung charger where people's chargers or their watches have snapped off. And to me, that's just another example of, thing I wrote a few weeks back. Smartwatch chargers right now are pretty terrible. And, if the Moto 360 comes along with a good wireless charging option, that's going to be yet another, reason to choose that over the competition.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that we've kind of talked about, I'm getting the Samsung one here and putting I'm putting the charger on it.
If this live is the on right... air, Phil's about to break his gear live.
Oh, it's not the right charger. I got the wrong charger. I wonder where the right
one is. Now you're really going to break it.
So much crap on my desk. No, I mean, just remembering, because it's got a little tab on it like this, and just remembering to pull from that tab hopefully helps. I don't know. You gotta be careful with that stuff, and Samsung needs to get it right. Absolutely.
On the other hand,
I was gonna say, you never hear about anyone breaking a USB port on a phone.
No,
do you really?
Although it happens, but
I haven't broken the back of my Nexus 5 putting it on a Qi charger either.
Ooh.
And how many of us have broken? I was just gonna say, how many of us have broken Pebble anythings? Because it's just a cable.
The cable will barely stay on there in the first place.
It's not a very good cable, but at the same time, it comes away pretty easily. It doesn't, you don't require to pull anything, are you? So,
What else in the Q&A? That was a good question. Sorry we hadn't talked about that in a while. Or at all. Ooh, that's an interesting idea. John would like to have a phone book on his smartwatch.
Oh, like a Yellow Pages kind of phone book.
Well, maybe. And you effectively do, because you can just ask Google to search stuff. But, yeah, I wonder if, what do they call themselves now, YP? Wonder if they'll do that in there.
Ryan, let's know. Which carrier preloads that crap on there?
How's Motorola getting updates through Verizon so quickly? Both on the Moto X and the Moto G for Verizon are on a 444. I've looked Motorola executives directly in the eye and said, how the hell are you doing it? And they just kind of look at me and go like this. They just smile. No, it's impressive as hell. I don't know. Maybe it's a money thing. Maybe they just are paying extra to get the test, you know, to get ahead on the line. I don't know exactly how that works, but I know that, you know, recertifying a phone after an update costs money. You have to pay the carrier to certify your stuff again. So maybe there's a deal worked out there. I don't know.
I'm not sure if there are certain synergies with the fact that they're already working on the software for the Droids too, but the Droids seem to be behind the Moto X and Moto G on Verizon.
You don't know how much of that is hardware and how much of that is the Verizon stuff that's loaded on there. You know, I mean, as much as we joke about it, you do have to get Droid's app working and certified on every single every major release.
Ooh, here's an interesting one. Where did it go? I just lost it. Conrad says, a smartwatch could have emergency medical info on it, allergies, medication, your doctor's numbers. It could, but that's not the sort of thing, especially if it's, you know, allergies or medicine you have to have or whatever. That's not something I want on a device on my wrist that has a battery or has a screen that could get broken, you know, relatively easily.
And you'd have to teach, like, an EMT how to use the damn thing to find it in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could, like, engrave it on the back, but that's still not the same as just one of those medical bracelets that, you know, you see it, you know what it is, you know it's going
to
be on
it. I wouldn't trust it to some device with, you know, less than a day of battery life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's just the problem of, you know, smartwatches becoming better known before that's even useful. I mean, it's not going to be one of the first things that you would check in, you know, a medical situation.
Yeah, I mean, people are just starting to kind of understand how to put owner information on lock screen of your phone. So, you know, your phone can be locked, but it can, you know, have an emergency contact number when it starts it up. You know, if you're in a car accident and, you know, you have a G watch on, I don't think anybody is thinking to pull up your G watch and try to swipe through it to look for medical information.
No. Bratislav, see if I got that right. Asks, is it possible that Google will release a new version of the Android L preview before releasing the stable version? I can't remember if we've talked about this, but I know we've talked about it internally. I don't think so.
Yeah. And I hope that they don't spend time coming out with a new release if the current release has the APIs implemented in the way that they want developers to implement them. I don't want them to spend time, you know, creating a stop point where they're going to release new factory images that have, you know, more of the proper design or, you know, animations are different. You know, that's a waste of time.
I mean,
they're not going to release new images just so, you know, the user experience is different or bugs are fixed or whatever. If they do, it's going to be because the APIs have changed and they want to let developers get up to speed on that.
Which the whole point of the APIs is that they don't change that rapidly. So we would hope that they wouldn't change in the last 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it's when you hear L developer preview, think app developer. Don't think phone developer. That comes.
Right. I think we answered a question about that last week about what the L developer preview meant for manufacturers.
So and look, there was that question in the Fireside chats at I/O. Where they were saying, look, well, because a lot of stuff is out in the open now, we don't have to be as secretive with keeping code to ourselves. We can work a little bit more closely, a little bit more openly with chip vendors and phone makers as well. So just because it hasn't happened yet, you know, there's plenty of time to come before the public release of L. It wouldn't surprise me if things did start to make their way out to manufacturers a little bit more quickly than they would have under previous releases.
What do you guys think about this? Was it French group Iliad that it's making a bid for T-Mobile? Like, everybody wants to buy T-Mobile all of a sudden, except for, you know, the one company we all said to, you know, Sprint, and like that never has been officially official, but, you know, nudge nudge, no wink wink.
I think that they, well, we should say, so Iliad is a French conglomerate kind of group that also runs a carrier in France that's small and just launched a few years ago. But they offered to buy a majority of T-Mobile for $15 billion in cash, which is kind of nice for T-Mobile. I think that they have a better chance, honestly, than I think most carriers have a better chance of picking it up than Sprint does. There's no antitrust situation going on if a French carrier.
Oh, and there
goes. I told you! There they are!
That's way louder than my washing machine.
I love that sound.
Actually, like, these windows are like thick and double pane. Anyways, you know, there are issues with Sprint buying T-Mobile from a regulatory standpoint. There are basically no issues from, you know, a French company buying a controlling stake of T-Mobile from a German company. We need to remember, you know, Deutsche Telekom owns a majority of T-Mobile US already. So I don't think that, you know, this isn't necessarily a thing where T-Mobile is going to go like, yay, all right, cash out time. Let's go, you know, get that bank wire set up for $15 billion.
But I think Ledger would say that.
Well, I think he's got plenty of money on the stage.
Just, you know, and throw his, just like throw a briefcase out and off we go.
I think that Sprint, you know, introduces, you know, via SoftBank, whatever, introduces a lot more regulatory issues than, you know, some French telecommunications company picking it up.
And it's also potentially problematic for Sprint if it goes that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. They got way more to gain from merging with T-Mo than now potentially this other, you know, than they would have to lose otherwise, you know.
I mean,
I kind of just don't care, though. It's like, how long have we, you know, first AT&T and that fell through, and it's like,
This would basically be, you know, just a different company taking over the reins as a majority stakeholder. You know, they're seeing T-Mobile as undervalued at their current stock price, and they think that they can buy them up and they'll be worth more. It's just not like a combination of a Sprint would be more of a change in the way that Sprint and T-Mobile both interact and work, whereas this would be, you know, this is just a French company owning T-Mobile instead of a German company. I mean, nobody talks right now about how Deutsche Telekom influences T-Mobile US's operations. They just think about T-Mobile US as a company. This wouldn't change that, I don't think.
But it would very much change a few years down the line, Sprint's network prospects, right? They wouldn't necessarily, in a few years, be able to pull a spectrum or anything like that. They'd be stuck pretty much on the road they're on right now.
Right, absolutely. And that's kind of the talk about Sprint taking over T-Mobile was basically buy them before they're bigger than you and you have no chance at all. And that's kind of where we're headed right now. We're less than a year away from T-Mobile being larger than Sprint, and I don't see those lines ever crossing again in anywhere in the near future. So this is kind of like a do or die situation for Sprint if they can try to drum up the money to buy out, you know, they're talking about buying out T-Mobile 100%, which only changes things slightly, but still, you know, throwing a lot more money is basically the only way they're going to win it over.
Yeah.
Chris says, Phil, where did your Nexus Q go?
Oh, actually it's just a little lower. See it? There it is.
It's on that pixel over there.
I had to take a picture of it this morning and I moved it down so I didn't have to go.
The Chromebook Pixel has been relegated to a Nexus Q display device.
I used it for the World Cup in here. That's how I watch the World Cup games. Because, you know, two big screens isn't enough. I had to use a Pixel.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I had three screens going for World Cup, too, so I understand.
Google Voice update rumors, S. Wendell, please?
No. I'm going to channel Jerry and say, it's dead forever and you're never going to have a phone call again.
Got nothing. Something happened with Hangouts this week. What was it?
You can call via Hangouts from Google Voice on
the web. I
thought
that was last week. Yeah.
This week, nothing happened. No.
Wasn't there some business stuff they're supposed to be talking about?
That was Hangouts, not Google Voice. But
I mean, actually, I've been doing that. I'm trying to think. I've been doing that through the Hangouts extension as it is.
Yeah, yeah. This gives you when you go just, to voice.kimball.com.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Which, yeah, whatever.
I think Andrew should just turn his whole desk around just so we can watch it go fast as well.
Seattle's a very safe town. There are not normally fighter jets flying around.
I was thinking, you know, perhaps with what's going on in the world, that's not as funny as I just thought it was. But damn it, I'm keeping myself in a good mood this week.
There you go. Oh. It's for a parade. Everything's good.
I tell you guys what I did Saturday. I saw Wynton Marsalis Saturday night, which was friggin' awesome. So it's keeping me in a good mood all week. Do you even know who that is, Andrew? Please say yes.
Couldn't tell you.
Oh, my God. All right, everybody listening, whether you're listening live or you're listening later, I want you to go on Andrew's Google Plus page and just send him Wynton Marsalis videos. Just to make sure we learn this boy by next week.
Sounds good. I'll write up a report for you for next Friday.
Yes, that is your homework for the next week. Anything else in the Q&A? Maybe we'll call it a week since we went friggin' 90 minutes last week.
We should look.
Message to Alex afterwards. I'm like, dude, you missed it. It was so good. He's like, yeah, I was drinking beer.
I've got another good one here. From Sachin. Will we see a Chromecast hardware update, or do you think we'll get an Android TV set-top box from Google instead?
I think we talked about this.
Exclusive.
Yeah, didn't we talk about that a little bit last week?
I don't recall.
I mean, does Chromecast need an update for what it does?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? What would it do with a hardware update that it doesn't do now?
I mean,
talk about maybe support for faster Wi-Fi networks of higher resolutions maybe at some point. Maybe they do 4K if they could.
But
beyond
you know,
that's really nothing.
We're not that far out from the original. I mean, we're, 1 year out from the original Chromecast launch? And so unless they're going to go up to, like you said, faster Wi-Fi and 4K or something, it's not exactly doesn't need any more power or anything like that.
No, and if the idea is to keep it cheap, then what you have right now is probably good enough.
It's only getting cheaper to make by the day as they continue to make them. So
I mean, I'm basically
going to do more with it. It just becomes an Android TV.
I'm going to replace all mine with Android TV, with whatever the set-top box ends up being.
And, I mean, you could see, you know, another 6 months from now, Google just says, okay, now the official price is $25. And, you know, that would make more sense for Google than creating a new device and continuing to sell it at $35.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they could do that. I think if they're just going to keep the current device, though, and if it is becoming more profitable every month, would you necessarily sell that many more at $25 compared to $35, or would it just be better to, you know, keep raking in that money, charging $35 for it, and then you know, with high margins?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, we don't know what the sales numbers are. They've always said we've sold millions of them.
If I could change one thing, it would be make it self-powered, like make it all self-contained, so you don't need micro USB to power it.
Yeah, and make the USB port not come straight out of the back, so you can actually put it up against a wall.
Yeah, that too. Something.
Dog leg Chromecast. So that it hangs down rather than straight out.
Well, I guess that'd I should say they give you an HDMI adapter, right? But
right.
They're already, that would be one thing to change. The kind of form factor is a little awkward depending, you know, it blocks adjacent ports and things like that. You know, that's kind of a problem depending on the set top or the TV you have, but.
Is that it? I think it's going to do it.
I think that's it.
It feels like a good place to stick a fork in it, if we will. Hey, they turned the air conditioning back on in my office. It makes me happy. All right, if you want to email us, you can podcast@androidcentral.com. We'll try to get into some more of those next week with a live Q&A. Awesome. I love the live Q&A. Best Hangouts feature of the past year. Vic and Dodra, wherever you are, on a beach somewhere. Thank you. You can get us all on Google Plus, search our names, easiest way to do it. Hey, by the way, if you're into the Instagram thing, and I know a lot of you are, go follow Android Central on there. We're starting to use it more, and I'm going to make these guys start using it more too, because so far it's just been me. It shouldn't just be me. These guys
prepare
are
prepare for cat pictures.
Interest, yes.
By the barrel.
Yes.
By the barrel full.
Andrew could be putting pictures of airplanes up there today. Or something. I don't know.
But I could. Yeah. They're just so fast. I tried taking pictures, I swear.
Actually, I think what I want to do is we'll do some Instagram contests in August, perhaps. That'll be fun. Maybe we'll do that. We're also on Twitter, at Android Central. Just go find our names for the rest of us. Follow us there. As we are every week, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. Call 888-468-6158 or just go to shopandroid.com. Be sure to use that coupon code AC10 at checkout. You will get 10% off your entire order just for listening to the show. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank them. And I think that's it. You will find me Friday from Dallas from the Geek House. So be sure to watch that. In our usual podcast time, I believe, starts at 3 p.m. Central Time. Did I just lock up?
Nope. No, you're here.
Okay. You're good.
My mouse just...
Don't touch anything.
My mouse just locked up. So cool. Yeah, so that's it. Hey, I'm back connected. Sweet. So yeah, I'll be in Dallas. We will be back at our regular time next Friday. And I think that's it. Go download our app. See ya.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.
That's a shill. I know.
One last shameless plug.